welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast, and we are going to talk about something very, very different today. If you remember, if you're a long time fan of the podcast, you go way back with us. We did talk about the music of Beatle children a long time ago, but it was very brief, and we talked about Sean Lennon just a little bit. But Sean Lennon's been in the news a lot lately, and Chris will have a pretty exciting story to tell, and we get to discuss Sean for the whole episode today.
Well, we're very specifically not just discussing Sean, but we're discussing his band, The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, who is touring currently. They had a bit of an American tour. I saw a show of theirs at Lincoln Hall in Chicago, which is a terrific venue. Talk about that a little bit later. But Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, they also opened for Beck recently. And right now I believe they're on a European tour. We're going to talk about their new album, Midnight Sun, which was released in April.
Mm-hmm.
That first cut you heard was Too Deep. That starts the album. We'll get into a track by track here in a minute. But the band consists of, during the recording of the album, the band consisted of two people, Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Mule.
His girlfriend.
His girlfriend. They met in 2007 or 2008 in the fields of Coachella.
Apparently. I know.
ran into each other.
Just happened to see each other there.
Yeah. Well, they were probably the two most beautiful people there. She has had a career as a fashion model in the past, and he stands out pretty.
Yeah, he does.
Pretty easy to recognize him. So, and apparently they had been dating for about a year when Sean says he discovered that Charlotte had a musical talent.
Doesn't that seem kind of weird that you wouldn't notice that after a year, especially with, I don't know, with Sean and his famous name and famous family? Don't you think that would have come up at some point in a year?
I don't know. Mm. It's strange.
I don't know.
Maybe she didn't think much of her own talents something. And once he heard her playing, he was like, let's start a band up. So
yeah.
they started the band. They recorded and released an album and then another sort of acoustic sessions type thing back in 2010. Both of which were much more subtle and much more of a acoustic kind of singer-songwriter type album. But this album's a completely different experience. It's if you could describe the sound of this album in a couple words, what would you say?
Wow. Well, I would say a few things about it. It's every song to me on the album sounds like the past in some way, or it's like taking something from rock and roll history and making it more contemporary. So I think that's something that really stands out. A big word for me would be just psychedelic. I think the whole album is really trippy and psychedelic.
Oh, I think you're very much right in the wheelhouse there of what this album is. Yeah. I think if you looked at it somewhat cynically, and you were like, well, what's Sean trying to do here?
Yeah.
You could say, well, he's trying to tap into a certain Beatles fan and their favorite Beatles music, which is from the Sgt. Pepper on.
Right.
And trying to replicate that. I don't think that that's what he's doing. I think it is to some extent, but not in a cynical way. I think it's accepting that, and or maybe even discovering that he has a lot of talent to play this type of music that is sort of a retro sound,
yeah,
in a new way and bring some new elements to it.
I think it's not a surprise that they're touring with Beck, who does a lot of the same thing. His music is very retro in a lot of ways too, especially some of his earlier music. So it's a pretty good match. But yeah, it's very, very psychedelic and also not just Beatles, but other sorts of old rock and classic rock kinds of things. A lot of vocals that sound like the Beach Boys at times, or just like this big wash of sound that really stands out. So
yeah,
I like that first song in particular. I think I read in one of the recent articles that you had sent me that Charlotte was the one who came up with that riff. It's very riff-driven.
Charlotte plays the bass, apparently.
Wow.
And in concert, she played the bass, too. So by apparently, I mean she does.
Yes.
But she also plays a lot of... Both of them are multi-instrumentalists. Imagine a two-person McCartney one instead of a one-person McCartney one. And they played apparently they played everything on this album. So since then, they've added people to the band. They're a five-person band when I saw them, and were really terrific. But that first song, yeah, it's like a very riff-driven song, Too Deep. That's what we heard to open the show. The riff's pretty good, and it sort of announces them as like, all right, whatever. If you heard our first album, this is going to be something totally different. This is totally a rock.
Yeah. Oh, album. Yeah. Yeah, it's got a great groove. A lot of the retro type sounds, like a Rhodes in the background, the guitar sound. There's a wah wah at the end. This whole album also sounds very busy to me. It's just like he's just trying to take everything. They are trying to put all these sounds on. If you listen under headphones, which I was doing, all these sounds just keep zipping in and out of the texture on you. And that's where I heard the Rhodes and the guitars and the wah-wah and all these different things. It also seems like a lot of Radiohead influence, too, this sound.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The second song in the album, Xanadu.
Yeah.
I really like this one. It's got a kind of an Eastern feel to it.
Yes.
And a very trippy effect on the vocal.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good tune.
Yeah. What do you think about the vocals on the album in general? Just even, we've talked about a couple songs. I mean, it seems like they're really buried a lot in the mix.
They are buried. I think they're buried because of just, in some ways, they're buried just because of Sean Lennon's vocal style.
That's a good point.
It's not really his vocal style is perfect for softer, quieter songs.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of a softer, quieter voice. I think perhaps in concert, the vocals stood out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But the vocals and the lyrics particularly aren't necessarily the strength of this album.
Yeah.
But there are some songs that the vocals do stand out, like the third track, Animals. Let's play a little bit of Animals and then we'll talk about that one.
Third song on Ghost of a Sabretoothed Tiger's album called Animals.
Yeah.
And that one, it reminds me a lot of another song that he wrote actually on his first album. Sounds like the song Mystery Juice, if you know that one.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly the same progression, almost the same melody. It's very self-derivative to me.
He does have a certain style of his, particularly, I'd say, characterized best in his chord changes.
Yes, definitely.
And in the rhythm of his songwriting, the rhyming there scheme there is pretty, you know,
yeah.
Say a prayer for the internet millionaire, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's very, he's done it a few times. It's come out a few times on a few different tracks.
Yeah, that really stands out because a lot of this album doesn't, his voice sounds very different. He's older now, so it's a little bit lower, but he just sounds a bit different, and it's beefed up in that one with the vocals, those a lot of ahs and really rich kinds of vocals, but yeah, it does remind me of that other song.
Yeah. This one also, if you go on the internet, has a real trippy video.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're both of them, their heads turn into different animals and different kinds of things like that. So it's pretty pretty good. I think this one too, the lyrics are the easiest to follow in this song.
Yeah, because of that rhyming scheme or just the
the vocal mix as well, you know, that we were talking about.
Yeah, you can actually hear it, which is a lot different than the next song, which has a very different singer.
Well, yeah, the next song, Charlotte sings lead on the next song. Much more subtle, hints of jazz and sort of that track. And
yeah.
It has a very lengthy instrumental sort of outro almost. You know, it doesn't really do a lot, but,
yeah.
You know, for some reason I enjoy it. It just kind of...
Yeah,
nice song.
This the title of this one's called Johannesburg. I don't know if it has anything to do with South Africa or not, but it does have a lot of weird psychedelic sounds. And you mentioned that coda, which is something I mentioned too. This the instrumental stuff stands out. Her voice is kind of like his. It's not strong, but it's clear. You can hear it certainly.
Yeah, you know that thing about Johannesburg. It's sort of I think a lot of these songs are sort of, and their style of what kind of a song it is sort of a storytelling style where, and even if the story is a little trippy and doesn't make much sense, we'll see a few more examples of that, later. Here's, the title track of the album, up next, and it's Midnight Sun. Let's hear a little bit of Midnight Sun. What's your reaction to Midnight Sun?
That's actually my favorite song on the album, I think. I love the groove, the riffs. It's got a lot of funky touches to it. It's a real mix of 60s and 70s. There's still the psychedelic, like you said, the treated vocals, but then it has this great funky groove to it.
Yeah, for some reason that reminded me of Deep Purple.
Yeah, I was going to say, like early 70s bluesy kind of, Deep Purple. Sounds like exactly like Smoke on the Water, doesn't it? The same.
Yeah. The other thing I really wanted to say is, two things. One, we were talking about the vocals. I think a lot of the vocals throughout the album are treated, you know, not just clean vocals, but run through some strange filters and things of that nature. I think what really stands out for me on this whole album, and this is a good example of it, is Sean's lead guitar playing is just phenomenal. And each solo has a sort of unique tone to it as well. It's very, very well done, and that really, really stood out in concert. I was like, wow, this guy has gotten really good.
Yeah.
By just touring around and playing with this band of you know, compared to even Into the Sun or his previous albums, you didn't think about the guitars very much.
No.
At all. And this is very guitar heavy. There are a couple extended sort of solos on some of these songs.
Do you wonder, you know, I think before this album, there was a period where he was doing a bunch of electronic music and kind of doing some other experimental type things. I think that seems to have come to fruition on this album a lot. You can hear the fruits of his labors in the studio.
Yeah. The following song is called Last Call. There's a little bit of a Wizard of Oz language. It's really the song. I think it's not that solid of a song. Got a pretty decent solo at the end, but otherwise it's kind of a somewhat forgettable track.
Yeah, it's really trying too hard almost to be Pink Floyd or Radiohead again with the weirdness. And
yeah,
it does change a little bit in the middle, which kind of is interesting, but yeah it's not one of my favorites.
I'd say similar about Devil You Know, the following track.
Yeah.
Pretty slight here on the album. It's pretty, I don't know if it's just placed weird in the running order or something, but it's one of the two most forgettable songs on the album.
My comment was that it starts to sound the same like the last song, or it's sort of in a lull at this point. Needs to come up with something a little bit different, a repetitive. It has sort of a Beck influence for me on that one. But yeah. I know the next one is kind of interesting because it's not an original song.
Yeah, here is Golden Earrings. It's a written by Ray Evans, Jay Livingston, and Victor Young. And
who are really household names.
yeah. That, you know, that songwriting combo.
Yeah.
it's a gypsy ballad, actually, made famous by Peggy Lee in the 40s. So, but it's definitely a different sounding cover and one of the standout tracks on the album. So let's play a little Golden Earring.
Song and cool version. I don't know. I've not listened to the Peggy Lee version, but I imagine it sounds quite different than this one.
Really, you don't spin Peggy Lee that often?
You know, isn't she? She's the one who did Fever.
Yeah.
So, oh, pretty good. A lot of these songs have these minor key arrangements or minor key settings here. It has a real dark sound to it, but. Is kind of mysterious sounding on this one.
Well, I like to that on numerous examples on this album. For instance, that Wizard of Oz thing, getting sort of a more of a dreamy sound on this. This one is has lyrics about gypsies and stuff, and we're getting sort of a gypsy kind of sounding thing. That one also too has just a awesome guitar solo towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Really.
I
think this is one of the better Sean vocal leads.
Yeah,
on it, too.
He doesn't sound so weak on it.
Yeah.
Do you find a lot of the songs are kind of constructed the backwards? So like the big stuff happens at the end, Like they all build to something like a long coda or some guitar work or it takes a while to get into them, I think.
Yeah. I would agree. I would agree. The next song, Great Expectations, it takes a while to get into. In fact, I haven't gotten into it yet. I'd say this one's a real kind of a dud.
You're kind of waiting. Slight. You're waiting for a great expectation here to happen of something right. happening, and it hasn't happened yet.
I don't think they think much of this song either because they didn't play it live. If you look at the set list, they don't really play it.
Yeah.
I think what really disturbs me on this is we have this sort of odd key. Kind of thing
the
happening.
Progression where is weird.
It's sort of the verse is in a minor key and then it goes to a major, but not anything that makes any sense of a major key.
No. So, it's all over the place. Yeah.
And then they put add a super duper trippy kind of vocal effect that just doesn't. It's like this is where it's like, all right, that's a little too much.
Yeah, a little self indulgent.
Yeah. But I really kind of like the next song. It is, and there's a story behind it. So we'll play a little bit of a song called Poor Paul Getty, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, so poor Paul Getty. What's the story behind this one?
Well, it's a true story about it's an ode to the grandson of oil tycoon Paul Getty, who in 1973 was abducted for ransom by Italian kidnappers.
Ooh.
And he had his ear cut off before his grandfather finally paid the ransom. And I guess the son, Paul Getty III, was permanently affected by the trauma and became a drug addict and just had a became blind and paralyzed
and all these
terrible things happened to him just because of this one incident. But there's a quote from Rolling Stone magazine of Sean talking about this, and he said, "I related to the idea of having a famous last name that attracts attention from creepy people."
Would he know anything about that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously. So he said his story always gives me the chills. So
wow.
It's funny because the song is very sort of cheery.
It is, yeah.
And they played this live on Conan, and they had a giant guy in an ear costume sort of dancing with them on stage. So they've sort of taken a whimsical approach to that. You said this song reminds you of a certain song?
Yeah, this is very reminiscent of the White Album to me. The chord progression, just the whole sound of it. You know, a lot of the songs so far have been really more psychedelic, but that one, if you take away some of the sounds and things, it could be on the White Album. It sounds a little bit like Sexy Sadie or I'm So Tired or like some John Lennon song. But very similar.
Dave, here in my... we didn't talk about that, but here are my notes. For Paul Getty, I said, true story, not out of place on the White Album.
Oh, my God. Well, wow. How about that? I swear, everybody, we did not talk about this in advance. So.
The next song, Don't Look Back, Orpheus, it has sort of a musical sort of tribute slash joke in it.
Yeah.
Which is that Orpheus, the mythological character who this song's kind of about, his mother's name was Calliope. So they play a lot of Calliope in the song, as we were talking about before about some of those other songs that they kind of like to play stuff that kind of fits with the lyrics. It has some nice harp synths in there. It's a little bit Sergeant Peppery, but and the song's okay. It's sort of a light song. It's sort of a I couldn't remember having heard it before.
That's what I think too. Yeah, I have nothing written about it except psychedelic again.
Now this next song is a pretty long one, but we'll play about.
This is the last one, right?
Minute or so of it, and it's the last song, and it's called Moth to a Flame. Let's play it, and then we'll have another chat about it.
Pretty excited about Moth to Flame there. Moth to a Flame, I should say.
Yeah. Pretty long preamble there.
Pretty long song.
And then it kicks into, like, it's the most psychedelic song on the very psychedelic album.
Yes.
Fantastic guitar there. Sort of a little hints of George Harrison there. Some sliding around. Really good arpeggio vocals later. Fantastic solo going out on it.
It's a good closer. It's a little long for me, a little too much repetition, but it's a good closer because it kind of, like you say, the most psychedelic of all the songs, so it puts everything together that you've heard so far into one song.
I feel like, too, the last couple minutes of the song, it's sort of like the whole album is sort of like lifting and floating away and kind of fading off.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of drifting up into the sky, so
like a moth to a flame.
Like a moth to a flame. Yeah. So pretty good. That one was just amazing in concert. It closed the regular portion of the concert. The differences in the concert, they played. They really kind of play a short set in concert when they. I saw them at Lincoln Hall, which is a just an amazingly good venue here in Chicago.
Was it just them, or was
They had an opener. The opener was one of the more solid openers I'd seen.
Oh.
And the opener seemed to play a little bit longer than you'd think. And then they came out, and they only played 13 songs.
Hmm.
Now, that one's a 7-minute song. I'm sure in concert it was more like 10 minutes.
Do they jam out too longer?
Yeah. They're a 5-piece band, very good band, and one of the songs, the song that they close on, is a cover from Syd Barrett.
Oh.
Called Long Gone, which is one of my favorite Syd Barrett songs.
Wow.
And it really kind of made me think, like, wow, Syd Barrett's kind of a real good comp for Sean sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. some of the lyrics are a little...
like whimsical.
Whimsical, maybe nonsensical to some degree, but still pretty good.
So what were the five instruments? They had, obviously, Sean and then Charlotte, and then what else did they...
They had two guitarists and a keyboardist.
Okay.
At some point, Charlotte went over and played keyboards on a couple of the songs. I think particularly one of the songs that was from the previous album, The World Was Made for Men. I think she went over and played piano on that one. So, or keyboards on that one. Sean was just up there front the whole time and blistering his rock guitars. And I got a nice picture of his guitar, which I posted either on our Facebook or Twitter or something shortly after I saw it a couple of months ago.
Did he talk to the audience at all?
Yeah, he's very, I wouldn't call him shy, but he's very, like, sort of nice and quiet. And when he talks to the audience, he's like, hey, how's everybody doing? There was a hilarious kind of thing that happened, though. The night of this concert was the same night as the Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals in hockey. So the Blackhawks were playing L.A., and that game went to an overtime or two before it was settled. The Blackhawks lost the game. So most of the opening group set was happening while a lot of people were in the lobby of watching, because the Lincoln Hall has a bar with a lot of TVs, and they had them all to the game.
Yeah.
So you could pop out in the lobby and kind of watch the action of the game, still hearing the band, and a lot of people were choosing to do that. Well, the game went on through most of Sean's set, although more people were in there watching Sean's set, and the Blackhawks ended up losing. And Sean said, at some point, was like, how's everybody doing? How did the hockey game turn out? Hockey match, I think he said. How'd the hockey match turn out? And they were like, boo, or whatever. It's like, oh, you lost. Oh, that's too bad. That's why everybody is depressed. he's like, well, I know all about that, about losing hockey matches. And then he's like, I don't know anything. And then they played their next song. Mm-hmm. So,
wow.
So what's your big takeaways from the group and the album?
It was interesting. It's not really my cup of tea musically, but I think he's developing as his own artist, which I think is good, and in a way acknowledging the fact that he comes from rock history and has this legend behind him. So instead of just trying to dismiss and ignore being a Lennon, I think he's trying to take the best aspects of his father and mother and craft them into something contemporary. So I give him credit. I think he's trying to come up with his own thing. And as I say, I like some of the songs. I didn't like others, but I give him credit. And I like some of the vibes, and I like some of the sounds.
Well, I like the album maybe just a little bit more than you do. I really, really like the band live. I would love to hear a follow-up album to this that is the band playing.
Yeah.
And more so than the two of them playing all the instruments and everything. Although they do it very well. I mean, his drumming is pretty good on this album too, you know. So
did you hear the album before you saw them, or vice versa?
I did. I got the album, and I might have only taken a couple listens to it.
Okay.
But I was pretty familiar with a couple of the songs, cuz that Animals video had been out for a while, and the other song we'll go out on the other song that I really like that we haven't played, which is Xanadu. So we'll go out on that one. But I give it a thumbs up. It's probably, if I was giving it a rating as an album, it's probably around the 6.5 to maybe 7 range for me. What about for you?
As I say, it's not really my typical style, so I think for what it does, it's good. Am I going to listen to it a lot? No. So for that, I'd give it probably a 5 out of 10, meaning it's either...
I'm shocked, Dave.
I know.
You're usually playing that song 8 Miles High and all decked out in hippie garb. And...
I know. That's totally me. I love psychedelic music. I don't know. It's I don't know. It's not really... not really my style, so I'd probably give it a 5, meaning it's neither here nor there. I give him credit, and I think there's, you know, some growth there, definitely from Into the Sun.
All right. Well, to balance you out, I'll raise mine up to a 7.
Okay, sounds good. We'll make it a 6 then.
There are a couple duds on it, but I think the better songs are really good and really encouraging about future good career with this group. So yeah. I hope he keeps it up. So let's go out with Xanadu, and we'll follow us on Twitter and all that normal stuff, Facebook, Twitter, tell your friends. If you don't like us, tell your enemies.
Definitely.
All right. All right, we'll talk to you soon, and here's Xanadu.